I took most of my devices off of the Wi-Fi here. That could have helped.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been an interesting...
It's like that phantom data usage, kind of like phantom power when you... Not phantom power like a microphone, but when you leave a power strip plugged in and a bunch of stuff is connected and it's still using 15 watts or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Just everything's just sapping the bandwidth.
Every kilobit matters when you have like, what, a megabit?
It's been interesting. It's been kind of like good to test things I'm working on with Wi-Fi that's like sub 1 megabyte per second. But also when you're trying to be productive, it can feel like somewhat of a hindrance. So that pushed me. I mean, most of the things that I'm working on right now are not live yet, especially with DK. So it forced me to like shore up my Webpack config and make sure that things are being split up into multiple bundles and gzipped and all that stuff. So that was good.
Man, I got to tell you, I was amazed by how easy it is using Webpack to split things up, split your code base up into multiple files.
Yeah, so I'm using the Common Chunks plugin, and I'm just taking everything that's in that starts in Node modules and tossing that into vendor.js, and then anything that's not just goes into bundle.js.
Yeah, I don't even remember what Nuxt uses something behind the scenes for that. I'm assuming it's probably the Common Chunks plugin or something similar.
Right.
But yeah, you just separate out your Node modules and then whatever other stuff you've got that needs to be broken out, and it kind of just makes it completely seamless. You don't have to think about it. It's just done.
Yeah. So the Nuxt config, you can pass vendor key. I think you pass it an array, right, of module names.
I believe so.
Yeah, that's what you do. And so that they use that to pass it through the Common Chunks plugin, and that's how they do the bundling there. I'm doing something similar, but since DK doesn't use Nuxt because it's mostly server rendered via Elixir, I'm just using the Common Chunks plugin myself, and I'm setting it to inspect to see if it's coming from node modules. If it is, then it goes into the vendor file. It was pretty easy, though.
Yeah, and it's such a big benefit. So I to give a little bit of technical background on this for folks who might not know what we're talking about here, when you're using Webpack, it's going to generate some, you know, compiled, minified JavaScript as your output. But a lot of times, if you're using things from MPN, you know, like vendor packages. So in mine, I've got like Axios, I've got Clipboard, ES6 Promise, Polyfill, a bunch of stuff, like things that you need, Lodash, all that kind of thing. But those aren't really going to change as often as your app code does. So by breaking it out into a separate file, you can improve your caching efficiency. Because otherwise, every single deploy, basically, the entire JavaScript has to be redownloaded. And at least in my case, like most of my JS bulk is from libraries I'm using, not from my actual app code.
Right. Yeah, so for DK's example, I think the bundle file is like 150K. After gzipping, and the actual app file is like 9K and after gzipping. So when the assets are generated, the bundle file has a hash appended to the file name. And so that hash doesn't change unless I actually change bundles and stuff. So across deploys, if you've been to my site and I deploy something new, the hash will have changed for the app or bundle.js, but not the vendor.js. So you would use the cache version of vendor and you would get the fresh copy of bundle. It's almost too easy to make it work like that. I remember Webpack 1, I was like, I didn't know enough about the idea in general to do it well. But with Webpack 2, kind of consolidating the config and the documentation getting better, it was just pretty easy to set it up.
Yeah, I feel like if you're using Webpack, modern Webpack right now, there is no reason to not also be using Common Chunks.
Right.
At least as far as I'm aware, it's great.
They even have a bunch of guides you can basically copy and paste, and it'll just work from their guides and their website. So yeah, it just works pretty well. And if you're using Nuxt or something similar, you don't have to do anything besides add, you know, pick and choose which vendor script you're using that want to go into the vendor JavaScript file. But you know, Nuxt does pretty much everything for you. So Nuxt also has the module things, right? And I think I was talking to you about this, and I don't think that you had seen them yet, but Nuxt, the organization, I guess, has made a community modules repo, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But it has a bunch of modules that people would typically need. So It has one for Google Analytics, for example, and it has one for Google Tag Manager, which both of those I'm going to be using on Knight's Next app. It has some stuff for PWAs, so it'll automatically install like service workers, and it'll automatically generate a manifest file, and it'll all automatically generate, like it'll take a source image that you give it, and it'll crop that image and resize it into all of the different application size icons for you, and it just kind of does it automatically. And the only thing you have to do is yarn add or npm install the module name and then register it in the config. So in the config, there's a modules key and you just give that an array as well. And then you're good to go. So I checked Watch Nature's alpha against the Lighthouse check in Chrome. And I think my lowest score was like 94 out of 100.
That's awesome.
The rest of them were pretty close to 100 out of 100. And I didn't do crap. I typed like six characters into, I added an array in a config somewhere, and that it got me all that stuff pretty much for free.
Yeah, it's incredible. The ecosystem is great. I believe there was also, you mentioned an Axios one, if I remember right, that gives you like really deep Axios integration. So you can just do like inside a component, you can just do this.axios and you get your global instance. So if you're talking to like a single API, which a lot of web apps are most of the time for many of the requests, you just kind of have that around and it's already pre-configured and ready to go.
Yeah, it just, again, it just makes it easy. Like, it's not that hard to do it yourself, but if I don't have to do it myself, then I'm all for it. And what's also cool is that most of the time you want to set certain like global variables for your Axios instances, like the base API URL or certain headers and stuff like that. And this makes it super easy. So you can pass, it's almost like a tuple that you're passing the config. So you have like, I think it's nux.js/axios and then comma, and then you just pass it a config object, and that gets passed to Axios when it's booted up and all that good stuff. So it's dead simple. So I had to add some custom interceptors and things like that, and I just popped a function. I had to override Axios's default params parser, because an app that I'm working on, the API, has nested query string parameters in the URL, and it wasn't handling that very well. So I needed to override the params parser, and all I did was slap a function in my Nux config objects that gets back to Axios, and it just worked.
What a magical thing Nux is. It's got a solution for like every problem that I run up against. I actually just had to do a bunch of stuff. I'm basically trying to figure out my modal situation for Nest Notes, and because modals are kind of weird in a fully single page app kind of situation where everything is happening inside Vue, because it's like you have to struggle with, where do I put this? How do I get this in the right spot in the document flow for what I need to do? And I've got some extra weirdness on that front, because with Nest Notes, because it's being shipped as both a web and a native app from the same code base, I've actually got like, there's this longstanding Safari issue on iOS, which looks like it actually might be fixed in iOS 11 betas. Hopefully that sticks. I need to do some more testing with that. But anyhow, if you have fixed position elements that are inside something with WebKit Overflow scrolling touch, you get a bunch of like flickering as you scroll, and it's unusable. It's completely unacceptable. So like any fixed elements have to actually be outside of my main app container. So like my app footer and my app header actually have to exist outside of there, because otherwise when I'm running inside iOS as a Cordova app, I get this horrible flicker, but not in any other situation. So it's like I'm kind of hamstrung a little bit by that.
Weird.
And so I've just been messing with that. And what I landed on for the modal stuff is using the query string. Kind of made sense for a lot of reasons. There were a couple other ideas I played around with. I messed around with the thought of having nested routes, which worked really well for some situations, but kind of messed some other things up and just made some things more complicated or more convoluted than they should have been. And also the possibility of using some kind of event system, but then you still need a place to store the state for that. And it's like, I can throw that in local storage, but that's kind of weird. I'd rather have it just directly in the URL, especially because of the single page app aspect of it. Like then it's something that the server side will actually see as well.
And then by extension, you can copy and paste that, and you should be able to get to the same location, given that you're authenticated and all that stuff.
Yeah, so query strings have a lot of benefits, but kind of the issue with that is when you click on something, on a link in a Nuxt app or in just a Vue app, where it's got it changes the query string, even if it doesn't change anything else, it scrolls you back to the top of the page, which is sensible behavior, I think at least, because if you're changing the query string, that could very well be an entirely different page. But in my case, for these modals, I want it to stick in the same spot on the page in the same scroll position. So I actually just added I don't know entirely what the word for it is, but basically like a global query string param. I can just pass keep scroll equals true anytime. And then in the Nuxt scroll handler, the key is called scroll behavior. It just looks for that. And if so, then it maintains the scroll behavior. If not, or the scroll position. If not, it just resets it to 0, 0. So it's like just the ability to customize every single thing so easily. There's just so many hooks available to you in that ecosystem. It's wonderful. You can really solve all your problems.
Yeah, it's working out really well. So in Knight's situation, there's lots of searching interfaces. And previously, when I wrote it in Vue 1, like, I don't know, 2 years ago or something like that. It's been a while.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I used Broadcast and Dispatch a lot. And it was fine then, but it doesn't... So what I'm doing is I'm converting like an event bus that gets passed around just into using Vuex, into just using a single store. And what's nice is that I already did this for the Elixir version of DK. So obviously for search results and things like that, if you go into one and hit back, you should go to the same location. You should see the same thing. You should see where you came from, right? So I have all that stuff kind of already written out, and I'm just kind of copying it over a little bit. But basically, I'm using query strings really heavily. And so when the Vue app boots up, I parse the query string, build it into an object, send it to like just dispatch a set filters or something, or reset filters. And then everything, like the UI just builds itself kind of just because of the Vuex state changes. And it's just easy, you know. There's no broadcasting dispatching, like, hey, you know, this component needs to wrap all the other components because it needs to catch an event and then redirect it back down to let the other things know that they need to update if the filters change. All of that weird like redirect logic is just gone.
I think that's been one of the things that has been most impressive to me about Vue and Nuxt as a whole, like as an ecosystem, is like we keep building more and more complex things. And they keep adding more and more complex features that do really cool and amazing stuff. But the barrier to entry doesn't really seem to be getting any higher. They've done such an incredible job at keeping the complexity low and making it so that things just kind of work as you expect. And if you need to customize that behavior, it's really easy and there are a lot of hooks available. That is so cool and it's just so different than I feel like what I've seen in some other programming ecosystems, if you will.
Right. You know, I was talking with, I think it was Mikhail. So we're doing like a little pair programming session yesterday on some Elixir stuff. And we were just talking about that. And we started talking about like the show because he's been listening for a while. And it's funny. So like when you and I started talking, I think that we were really interested in technology. And so the specific technologies that we're using, right? So we were working a lot because we liked the technologies that we're using. I wrote a lot of Vue because I liked writing Vue, not necessarily because I wanted to get something done, if that makes sense.
I get you.
Yeah. And then so like you fast forward to where we are now. And I think like for both of us, there was like a key that flipped, like, okay, now I'm comfortable and happy with the tools I'm using. So now I just want to get stuff done. And, we were just talking, and I was just saying how I could not be happier with the tools that I'm using right now because I just feel productive. I feel like I know both Elixir and Vue well enough that I don't need to spend a lot of time upskilling. And what's even crazy is that like Nuxt handles so much stuff for me that I haven't really had to go dive deep into like learning about PWAs yet because I'm reaping a lot of benefits from their hard work. And when I want to do that, they have the documentation written for me. So they're basically like, here's what you need to know and here's what we're doing for you.
Yep.
So it was just cool to like think about that yesterday. I was like, man, I've come a long ways. I've learned a lot. But also I'm just happy like just doing work now. I'm not like dreaming of greener pastures. It's just things are just working well.
It's really nice when you feel like your tools are actually tools and not hindrances.
Right. Yeah.
That's such a good feeling. And it's like, oh, I actually can spend a bunch of time focusing on like how I want to architect this stuff. I can focus on like actual business logic problems instead of struggling with the tools that I'm using and trying to force them to do the thing I need them to do. They just work. and then I could, figure out what my business needs, what my app needs.
Yeah, yeah. I even said, I think it was yesterday, I said, I feel like I'm actually designing schemas. I feel like I'm actually designing, like I'm actually architecting the back end of this application. Whereas before, I think I would just move in smaller increments, if that makes sense. So I would like think, okay, phase one, let's do that. And then I'm done. And then I would get to the end of phase one and I would realize a bunch of stuff that needed to change, or I feel like I had a shorter sight or shorter vision on things. And now, like yesterday or 2 days ago, I think it was yesterday, I designed a whole like group and permission system for Watch Nature and then implemented it in the same day. Like it's done, Paul. It's in the alpha. What I told you I was going to build, I built it and shipped it yesterday.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. And that's working out pretty well.
Yeah, it's working great so far. So I guess to recap that, I was trying to figure out, so I know in Watch Nature, like pretty much every application as it grows, there's going to be lots of different like permission levels and groups. And most of the time people just slap like an attribute on a column of like a string, like is admin or like a flag or something like that, a Boolean, and call it good for a while. And then, you know, down the road, they have to figure out their permission systems. And I kind of wanted to skip that whole feedback loop. And I was thinking, okay, so how can I have a not set number of groups that people can be added to? And how can I add permissions granularly to those groups as we go? And what I ended up settling on is I have an accounts users table. So anything that happens that deals with like people's information as a user is namespaced by accounts in my database. So I have accounts users, I have accounts groups, and I have accounts users groups. And so basically I have the user, and a user and groups are related via many-to-many through a join table. And that way I can just add groups by adding groups to a database. I don't have to like, I guess in Rails I would have done something similar with like an enumerator or something like that. So I would just change, I would add a string or I would add a symbol to an enum or something like that. But with the current setup, I can have as many groups as I want, and users can belong to as many groups as I want them to belong to. And then each group can have its own permissions. So phase one of this is that my app, while we're pretty small, I can just say, is this user in the admin group or are they in the expert group or something like that? And either permit or deny based off of that. And then down the road, what I can do is I can add accounts policies, and then a group can have many accounts policies, and then I could check granular permissions off of policies belonging to that individual group.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And then you can have a single policy that is associated with multiple groups. I want to avoid saying belongs to.
Right, right.
Because that has database implications, but right. Or at least in Rails.
Sure. It'll probably be another many to many, just because I want to think as these policies is almost like Vuex or Redux actions. So it's something very specific within the application, and it represents
logic is self-contained. Like it's all in one spot, and you know exactly where to look for any permissions thing. Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah, so like an admin group and an expert group should both have the ability to correct a species tagging, like actually change mm-hmm. that, and not just like suggest a correction. But only the admin group should have the ability to actually like edit the description or something like that, because you wouldn't want an expert to actually change what someone's writing. You just want them to be able to like scientifically correct the data, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, that's really cool.
So I'm pretty happy with it. It feels good. It's all in the database, which is where I wanted it to be. It's not like spread across different files. The hardest part, and this is funny that this is the hardest part because it's not even hard. So if you're using like an enumerator, or if you have a column that contains different strings, I mean, you have like a preset, you know, definition of strings that you would be keying off. So you'd be like, is this admin or is this user's role admin or something like that? But with using tables like this, I have to have a step first where I have to find the record that represents an admin group. So what I ended up doing was in my accounts module, I have a function. I have a function called something like accounts.listGroupsByUser, and you pass in a user ID, and that'll return a list of the groups, a list of group names that the user belongs to. So like if you pass my ID, you would get like admin back. Or if you pass like a scientist's ID, then you might get like community and expert back or something like that. So in my permit, in my policy modules that actually do the checking, I could just say accounts.list list groups by user, and then I get a list back, and then I can just see if that array includes something that's specific that I'm looking for. Or I have another method called accounts.userInGroup, which is not a great name, but it works. And then you pass a user ID and you pass the group name that you're looking for, and it returns a Boolean, which is a little bit shorter.
Just as a Boolean indicating whether or not they belong to that group?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I've got a sort of a similar thing. I may have talked about this a bit on the show recently, but I moved basically all the permissions logic for NestNotes over to the client. And the main reason for that is just because it was kind of absurd to calculate on the back end. And before, mm-hmm. Nobody at me or anything, of course, everything is still being checked on the back end, but I'm not shipping, right. I'm not calculating and shipping that like just for GET requests. The client calculates that in order to figure out what is displayed in the UI. And it's right, just, I have a class called Nest Permission Checker, and I just pass it a Nest ID, and it defaults to the current user, but I can pass it a different user if I want. And it just finds those permissions, and then it's like, based on this Nest user object, I use a wonderful, wonderful gem called Bitmask Attributes. And basically what that allows you to do is just set up, it just sets a bitmask. You just set up an integer column, and you can store a bunch of data. So, like, I'm pulling it up. Nest permissionable. So I have that they can view friends and family moments. They can view private moments. They can buy print products. They can post and edit moments, and they can edit the Nest details. And that's all just stored in the single column. And it actually just gets returned to me as an array of strings on the client side. That's how it ends up getting serialized out. And so I can just look for that.
I see.
And it just makes it really simple. It sounds a lot of ways similar, but I don't have like singular permissions. So like a user in NestNotes, you might belong to many nests. Like you have your own for your family, and like your cousin or something has one, and they want to share let's say a sibling has one, and they want to share their kid's stuff with you. And so you'd have different permissions for them, for theirs, than you would for your own, right?
Right.
So, but that's been working out. Working out great. I feel like breaking this stuff out into chunks where you always know where your permissions logic is. Doing that early is so, so important, because otherwise it just gets really unwieldy.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought about it, and I read, like, I Googled a bunch, and like half of the article, three quarters of the articles were like, yeah, just slap a string onto the table. And I was like, no,
yeah,
I don't want to do that.
Definitely don't do that unless you have very simple permissions needs.
Right. Yeah. So I'm pretty happy with what I came up with. And the cool thing is that it's expandable. So I can add new groups whenever I want, and it doesn't affect any existing data. And I can add new permissions or policies as much as I want, and it doesn't affect any existing data. So like thinking of like rolling out a new feature, it would be super easy to just roll out all the new policies with it and then attach them to groups as needed. So like you can have a beta column or a beta group, and then attach specific beta policies to that. And then once that's ready to roll out, you would just add more join rows, you know, onto users groups, and you're good to go. Or groups policies, it would probably be called. But I'm pretty much doing the same thing on my client side. And like you said, of course, my API checks everything. Like, you should never just believe that the client is sending you good and decent things.
Yeah.
You should always just assume that someone's going to try and mess with something, because they will. And so my API checks every request against these permissions. And the client in Vuex on current user, I just have an array of groups that the person belongs to, because I'm doing phase one and I haven't started phase two yet. And so in the application, I'm just checking to see if the user belongs to a certain group. And then if they do, then I show... I expose UI controls, like a delete button or like an edit button or something like that.
Yep, that sounds very, very familiar.
Yeah, it just works really well. It's super easy. If Brady's like, hey, make me an admin, 2 seconds later, you know, his app is updated. All he has to do is log out and log back in, because, of course, I'm storing the current user stuff in Redis to persist sessions and things like that for Nuxt, for server-side rendering and stuff like that. But all he has to do is log out, log back in, and then his UI will be different. Pretty simple.
Getting really warm in this room. It's super hot. All right.
Super hot. Nabil's favorite game.